We are joined, I think, now by Danny Haifong himself. Are you there, Danny?
Yes, I am.
Hey, thank you very much for joining us. I read your column and a Black Agenda Report, doing all this really excellent work, in my opinion, following this, nervous breakdown the American ruling class seems to be having. You have written a review of Fred Jerome's new book, of course, a republication of the Einstein file with additional material, and it also has a foreword by Ajamu Baraka and by David Suzuki, two really prominent individuals, particularly on this front about on the subject of government interference in the personal affairs and rights of citizens. What struck you about the book? What caused you to think this is a book I want to review?
Well, what struck me about this book is its timeliness. Right now, what we're seeing in the U.S. ruling class is the reemergence of Cold War McCarthyism in a different form, this time in its more pure anti-Russian form. But the consequences have been the same. The left has experienced a pretty heavy-handed attack, especially when it comes to publications like Black Agenda Report, and even left-wing groups like Black Lives Matter have all come under this umbrella, this label of dupes of Russia, and there have been significant consequences. Our work has been suppressed online, and there is this continuing campaign to delegitimize any alternative political thought and analysis and organization under this anti-Russia hysteria. And so this book really makes the historical connection as to why this is happening. And what we learned from Fred Jerome, John Baraka, David Suzuki, is that if you read Einstein's FBI file, which is over 2,000 pages long, you see what the FBI and U.S. intelligence apparatus as a whole is really interested in. And that was suppressing political dissent. That was ensuring that there was no protest to war, that it was always surveilled and monitored and delegitimized whenever possible. J. Edgar Hoover had a special obsession with Albert Einstein, not least because it was found that J. Edgar Hoover actually had many connections to Nazis, and as we all may know, and your audience may know, that Albert Einstein actually came to the United States because of the fear of Nazi persecution. And he spent a lot of his life protesting all wars, not just wars that maybe the Nazi-led German regime led, but also wars that the United States was a part of and the European world was a part of. He was an anti-imperialist at his heart, even though he was not sympathetic to the Soviet Union per se, and so this, this attempt by the FBI to label him a dupe of communism, which is all over his FBI file, is really indicative of what's happening now, where leftists like Ajamu Baraka, myself, people of the Gender Report, but also just the broader progressive left from the Green Party and so on and so forth, have all been labeled Russian in order to delegitimize us because we are being grouped in with Donald Trump and Russia and this whole hysteria that really has no factual basis to it. It's all ideological, and it's to ensure that the center continues the whole. But as we are seeing, the center in the United States is really just the ruling class.
The center seems creepy.
Yes, it does.
I was struck by this matter that you raised. Einstein, a simple brief, if you were to ask somebody at immigration or whoever interviewed him or et cetera, and they said, well, who is this guy? They say, well, he's a tough guy. He's an intellectual. He has a point of view. Mm-hmm. And that would be the honest answer. And you cannot predict what he's going to think because he's a thinker.
Mm-hmm.
I was struck by something, and I read it some time back, but that Jerome pointed out that it as you did, that he wasn't a communist and he wasn't particularly sympathetic to one state or another based on their history, but he was, a socialist. Remember the essay from Monthly Review, but the key thing was he wasn't anti-communist. He didn't, being a European, having his own experience, knowing many communists, knowing many social democrats, knowing liberals, he didn't play the game of hatred, right? Shunning and putting people to his side. He knew people he liked and trusted, and then others he didn't.
Right. Yeah. And his politics, the FBI file really does a great job. Fred Jerome does a really great job analyzing his FBI file and showing that Albert Einstein had a lot of different political affiliations, some where he had a leadership role, others where he may have just been attending meetings or demonstrations or what have you. But he had a real sort of contradictory political ideology that allowed him to really be shaped by the political moment that he was in. And that's really what I got from the book, was that there was a real deep political struggle happening in the United States at this time, and happening globally, of course, especially during the aftermath of World War One and the lead up to World War Two. There were all sorts of burning questions: American racism, this new emergence of the so-called Golden Age in the United States, and also the U.S. The expansion of U.S. military power abroad. All of these burning questions that were happening as Albert Einstein was participating in organizations such as the American Crusade to End Lynching, which was formed in part by Paul Robeson in 1946, as well as his earlier work against fascism during the Spanish Civil War, or his work during both World War One and World War Two in opposing the rise of fascism across Europe. So what we learn really is that Albert Einstein was no communist, but that really isn't the question, right? The question is, what was the FBI and what was the ruling class so interested in then? Because if he wasn't a communist, then what was the purpose of the anti-communist crusade against him? And the real purpose was the complete annihilation and elimination of dissent generally against the ruling system of capitalism, imperialism, and racism. That was the burning question of the period, because what the Soviet Union represented abroad, and eventually China, and eventually these national liberation struggles abroad, but also the American struggle against racism and against, unrestrained capitalist exploitation here, what it all represented was a deep threat to the interests of the oligarchs that rule this country. And ultimately, because of Einstein's stature, because of his popularity, because of his ability to get the attention, grab the attention of both elites and the masses of people generally, that was a real big threat to the FBI, who saw his politics as potentially a real threat in the, in the continuation and maintenance of the oligarchy.
Yeah. We're speaking to Danny Haifong. He's a contributor to Black Agenda Report, and he has a review of the new republication of the Einstein file by Fred Jerome, Baraka Books. It is striking that this element that he brought sort of like if we were to compare our times now. I mean, he arrived in a country that called itself a democracy, a republic, etc., and he looked around and he said, this is a sickness exists here, and sickness is racism. And of course, he looked around, so who's doing anything about it? And he turns to people like Robeson, Du Bois. And as you point out in the interview, article, he lectured at a black university. Could you talk about that? How remarkable, how about the fact that you and I are talking about it now? How many Americans know he did any of that?
Yeah. No, most of the Americans know Einstein as some famous scientist and most people don't even know, including myself, how far-ranging his scientific contributions were. But when we're talking about his politics, yes, it has been a real struggle, especially just that period in general, right? I think what's indicative of Einstein's story is the fact that that entire period has been whitewashed and even erased from memory. And part of that is because it's the period that is supposed to represent this rags-to-riches story of the United States, where a down-and-out capitalist power like the United States from the Depression emerged into this glorious empire with wealth way beyond the means that it could have ever imagined. And so what we have is Albert Einstein, his history, his political history, ultimately becomes a real threat. The notion that someone like him, who was inspired by the anti-racist struggle in the United States because he had experienced a lot of racism in Germany growing up, he had known what it was like to be ostracized and to be exploited based on this mythical notion of race. And so when he came to the United States, I don't think he was so much expecting to see what he saw: the lynching, the segregation, the complete degradation of black people. And he joined their cause. And yes, he did speak at Lincoln University, I think more than once, to discuss why racism is the most central question in the United States. And he worked tirelessly. He was great friends with Paul Robeson in particular, who visited him many times before he eventually passed, before Einstein eventually passed, just discussing politics and discussing what to do next. So,
in terms of the issues that were crucial and are, he was associating with the best people he could find. And my impression is, as allies, and everyone was shocked that it turns out to be Robeson and Du Bois. When it's everybody says, "Oh, no, you're supposed to go to the Democratic Party, get yourself introduced to Adlai Stevenson or some such thing."
Mm-hmm.
But instead, he said, "Oh, these are the guys fighting." I want to ask you about the analogy. Maybe it's far fetched, but here we have a growing black resistance to police violence in black communities, imprisonment of black Americans, which is extraordinary and really is a parallel to the 30s and 40s in many ways. He took on the issue of lynching, and the big liberal Roosevelt wasn't very interested in that project. And it strikes me that, you know, we have a similar thing now. We're speaking out now against, and there's even a prison strike as we speak. He took that up, with anti-lynching, a really courageous thing to do. And yet again, the library shelves are full of books about Einstein, and none of those biographers, except Mr. Jerome and a handful of others, maybe not a handful, tell us that he led an anti-lynching campaign.
Yeah, and he was definitely one of the leaders of that campaign in the American Crusade Against Lynching. And that was one of the most talked about aspects of his work in the FBI file, because, as we all know, J. Edgar Hoover was obsessed with squashing any legitimate black resistance struggle in the United States. That he made that a priority during his long and illustrious tenure as the leader of the FBI. But what we see right now is how much we can really learn from Albert Einstein. I think there really is no comparable work to Jerome's in this regard. I think that's what makes this book so important, is that the book not only details the specifics of what Einstein was doing, but it really does it in a way where the FBI file becomes almost a historical document that details what exactly was going on during this critical period of the 20th century, where there was this huge struggle for liberation against racism, for alternative economic development models like socialism. You really get the sense that this was a more dynamic period than what we're often told. Mm-hmm. And I think that what Albert Einstein really teaches us is that there is really a capability among people who may not know or may not affiliate with communism or radical socialism, like someone like myself, who considers, I consider myself a radical socialist, but mm-hmm. that there is really real value in developing alliances and being able to formulate principled political positions, not based on the protection of your career, on the protection of your individual interests, but on what you really believe is correct for humanity. And that's what Albert Einstein was doing while he was alive. He was analyzing what was correct for humanity. He may have not always been correct. He may have, you know, wavered on some questions on Israel or even the Soviet Union. He was invited to the Soviet Union for a science conference, and he rejected it based on, in my opinion, nothing. But, you know, he was always analyzing political developments based on principle. And that is what's important, because what we see now in the United States is that many people are getting swept up or just being silent and letting it pass by this insane love theft that is happening with the U.S. intelligence apparatus being labeled some sort of quote-unquote resistance to Donald Trump. Yeah, that's like what we're really facing.
Right. This thing of the, I read, I guess we could call it liberal left editorials and so-called think pieces by thoughtless people, but where they say, please, please, FBI, please, please, CIA, save us.
mm-hmm. Exactly.
Who the heck they think they're dealing with? I mean, it's not, you know, Jerome is a good place to start, but I mean, what is kind of, how do, you know, we seem to me we're very charitable in using the word left to describe people who would turn to the, you know, basically the nastier portion of the state, the people who Norman Mailer said like to do wet jobs, which he knocked people off. But they're almost, you know, Mueller is our hero. He's got to save us. Anyway, I want to get your thoughts on it.
It's all true. What we're seeing is this development that is characterized by the ruling class. It's led, it's being shaped. We are having trouble really defining the left because processes and developments over the last 40 years, from the economic crisis that has been decades long, to the endless wars, to the repression of the left, all of that, which has happened since Einstein's time, and the mid-20th century and the early 20th century are also big pieces to this. There has been this process of centralization, of monopolization, of consolidation of the oligarchic system in this country, which has confused forces, disorganized many people. There really is no left organizational formations in the United States that are at all viable or can actually struggle for power right now. And so what we see is that the ruling class controls the narrative, but they're controlling the narrative of a system in crisis. And so what they have attempted to do, and I think they've done relatively well, even though I think it's all going to come to a head and fail, is they've managed to encapsulate what used to be called the liberal left into a fascistic terrain, where the U.S. intelligence apparatus is seen as heroic, where everything about the United States, and this gets into a topic I'm really interested in, American exceptionalism, everything about the United States is exceptional, including a murderous, repressive intelligence apparatus responsible not only for the destruction of revolutionary movements in the United States, but also for countless coups, wars, anti-aversion.
There's a romance of the so-called progressives with exceptionalism and humanitarian intervention. Mm-hmm. They watch what happened in Brazil, and they laugh that Lula is in prison, the most popular leader of Brazil. Aristide is not allowed to run for office, nor his party. Mm-hmm. And the liberal left is amused, or we'll send more peacekeepers, or, you know, the Clinton Foundation will take care of the whole thing. It's ridiculous.
Exactly, and that's the danger that we're in, is that we're seeing this so-called quote-unquote resistance really take the form of almost a fascistic movement to military dictatorship in the United States. That's really what's been happening, is that we've had such a consolidation of economic, forces in the military-industrial complex that it is right now in an open struggle with Donald Trump, someone that should never be defended. But right now with the anonymous op-ed and the Mueller investigation, all of it, we see this real deep division in the ruling class that a real left in the United States, a real radical left, could take advantage of to, you know, the interests of struggling people here in this country. But what we see instead is that the constant barrage of what I call the real fake news, which is the idea that Russia is under all of our beds and that the left and the right are colluding to destabilize American democracy. All of this is working to promote a discourse that influences left-leaning people to support projects like a potential world war with Russia, or supports projects like surveilling content of all independent media, which includes any content that deviates from the ruling class political line on any issue. And so this is really dangerous territory, but in the end, what it leads to is this crisis of the system, this crisis of imperialism, which is not going away, and I predict will only continue to exacerbate into this midterm election period, into the next economic crisis, and create real conditions for rebellion.
This is Danny Heifungen of and his contributor, Black Agenda Report, and elsewhere. And Danny, I'd be remiss, I didn't ask you. You have a book coming out in April. Who's publishing?
Yeah.
What's in the book?
So the book is newly titled. It's actually just changed today. It's called American Exceptionalism and American Innocence: People's History of Fake News from the Revolutionary War to the War on Terror. I'm writing it. Or we already have written it with fellow Black Agenda Report contributor Roberta Servant, who's been doing weekly book forums. And the book is published by Skyhorse Publishing, and it is also going to be included with a foreword from Ajabo Baraka and an afterword from Glenn Ford. So it's going to be a very prolific book that will contain 21 chapters on the notion of American exceptionalism and American innocence as fake news. And we discussed the issue historically from the very origins of the United States all the way into the current period with themes like Russiagate, as we've been discussing, the war on Syria, humanitarian intervention. We try to bring together some real critical subjects and topics and developments that have occurred over this 200-year quandary that is the United States, and try to bring it to an analysis of American exceptionalism, this ideology that presumes that the United States can do whatever it wants because it's a force for good. Yes. And we're here to show that actually American exceptionalism is fake news. And it's actually fake news promoted by Wall Street, not just Donald Trump, but it's promoted by Wall Street. It's promoted by white supremacists of all stripes. It's promoted by the U.S. military apparatus in order to ensure that endless war and austerity and repression of the left like us continues to occur unabated. So we try to use the book as a real primer for people to be able to understand just how deep this ideology runs from social movements to what the ruling class is doing.
Well, that's very good, and that'll be out in April. I hope you're going to tour with the book, and I'm going to join a committee to invite you here. I think it would be great to see you. We should look forward to reading that book. Danny Heifung, thank you very, very much for being our guest.
Thank you so much. Great to be back.
Okie doke. Bye-bye.